From Minimum Fun, here comes Vox Pop. Yeah, minimum fun indeed. Good afternoon. It's 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop Thursday, August 7th. Already it's the middle of the summer. It's gardening today. And we welcome back Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. He was lost last time and we found him. Delilah Riggs of the Berry Patch is here. If you have a gardening question, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email as well. Several people have done that. It's a popular show, so if you have a gardening question, get in right now and just be prepared to wait a while. 800-348-2551, voxpop@wamc.org. Fred, Bob, and Dale Isla, and your calls coming up right after the news. Good afternoon. It's, what is it now, 2:08, and it's time for the show, folks. It's gardening today on Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you. This is our call-in show. If you have gardening questions, this is the time to get on the line. 800-348-2551. Couple of open lines left, but there won't be soon. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance. And Delilah Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. We welcome your calls at 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Whichever way you do it, do it now. And hello, Bob Graves. You were not here last time. Great to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be back.
A lot of work over at the shop?
Yeah, well, I had visiting family.
So really? I'm sorry. How was it? Was it okay?
No, it's great.
Good.
A lot of grandchildren.
That's fun.
That's six.
Cool. Let me ask you a question about grandchildren. I don't have any grandchildren yet, but I'm sure I will. My mom, when we had little kids, my mom would come visit. And she would get the noisiest toys possible and then say, so long. Do you do that sort of thing?
Yeah, we get reprimanded for that
sort of
thing. Yeah. No battery-operated things that make noise.
Mom was having none of that. She did what she wanted. Fred Breglia, how are things over at the Landis?
We're doing really good. We're our 5K race is this weekend, so we've just been dialing into course, and it's been dry, but that's kind of helped us get the trails in like phenomenal shape, so we're ready for the course and putting in some plants as well and some landscape stuff. So that's been a little bit of a battle trying to keep things watered. But
it's dry.
It's dry out there. I guess I heard rumors of a few people around getting rain, but it missed us again. So
we got a little bit in Steventown.
Yeah, we did not.
Yeah, we got a quarter of an inch.
Yeah.
But we're doing good.
Delilah Riggs, what's happening at the Berry Patch?
It's harvest time, and every day we're harvesting blueberries and raspberries and strawberries and melons and tomatoes and cucumbers and zucchini, and the list goes on.
You're doing the Food Friday tomorrow with Pie Lady Ellen Gray, and she said this is the time. She's got blueberry pies and peach pies and all that stuff. Interestingly, a couple of my daughters, they don't like pies. What happened? You don't like pies either, do you?
Oh, I love pies.
You don't like cake.
Right. I don't like cake. Pie is the only dessert that I eat.
Really?
Dale Isla told us to make peach blueberry pie, which my wife is doing.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely
phenomenal. Don't waste that on the grandkids.
Oh, no.
Save it for
yourself. She has to make two.
Yeah, my son Freddie made a apple blackberry pie, which I love apple pie, and I would not have thought that combo was going to be the bomb.
Yeah.
Who made that? My son Freddie. He's a cook there. He bakes and stuff too. So
does he want to be on Food Friday too?
Well, I'll ask him. We'll talk.
Delilah, what's with the wiggly things? What's going on?
Yeah, so this is a time of year we're getting lots of calls in about something's eating my tomato plants, and it's usually tomato hornworm. And so I found a couple. My husband found a couple for me this morning before I left, and so I have these 3-inch long, about 1/2 inch in diameter, big long worms that are voraciously eating this tomato leaf that I brought in. It's already eaten. Two of them have eaten about half the leaf.
These are alive. You're bringing live worms into the studio.
Absolutely. You got to see that nice horn on the back to understand why they're called tomato hornworm. This
right,
little
you listen,
spike
keep
on
talking.
The back.
I'm going to call OSHA.
What's the adult of that one?
It's a sphinx moth.
That's a sphinx moth.
Yeah.
So it's an evening flyer.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of people
Don't know where it comes from.
Oh, that turns into a Sphinx moth?
It does.
Yes.
One of my favorite moths.
They are really cool.
I love those
moths.
Yeah.
Really
cool. All right, we'll let this sucker live then. Yeah. What are you going to do with it when you're done here?
Probably throw it out the window.
Can I, really?
You mind if I bring those home for Mikey?
Not at all.
I'm
going to
bring those home for Mikey. He's going to freak out when he sees them.
Dude, what if they get loose in the Landis Arboretum?
We're going to bring them over to our rental property. So
somebody else's.
Let the landlord deal with it. Yeah, smart. Good for you.
She's not listening today.
I was just going to say, the reason I brought him in is because I also have one that is full of parasites.
Oh.
And it's covered with all these little tiny white cocoons. There's over 50 of them. And if you look really carefully at the white cocoons, it looks like little manhole covers that are flipped up.
Yeah.
And so a parasitic wasp lays its larvae in the hornworms. And the one that I have here is all brown and dehydrated now, covered with these white cocoons because the wasps parasitized it and killed it.
Right.
And so now the next generation of wasp is out there laying its eggs, hopefully in the live tomato hornworms. And I just think it's the coolest thing that we have these insects, good insects, that will take care of the bad insects for us.
I think it's cool, too, but I really prefer when you bring food to eat.
Yeah, well, next time.
No, this is cool. This is really interesting, and I love the Sphinx moth. I mean,
Me too.
Think they are so cool.
They are. They're really cool.
Delilah, I beseech you, don't kill this thing.
I'll send them with Fred.
Okay.
They're going to Mike, and he's definitely not killing them. He's definitely letting them. He loves critters.
The larvae, I mean, not for nothing, a little butter in a frying pan, it looks delicious, right? No?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know about that.
To have the hornworms to have the wasps. So this is one instance where sometimes having the problem pest sustains the good pest.
Absolutely.
That's true.
You need to make sure.
You need both.
Yep.
You do need both.
Well, I suppose we got to take care of a couple of emails here, and then we'll jump to the phones. Jim in Glenmont wrote in, oh, good heavens, yesterday afternoon. We planted garden lilies underneath a weeping cherry tree. Our thought was they wouldn't get too tall. Boy, were we wrong. They're over 6 feet tall, lots of fragrant flowers, but they grow into the tree limbs and leaves, limiting the display. So we'd like to move them. I'm worried about digging them up and damaging the tree roots and killing the tree as a result. Any suggestions? And if we can do it, better to do it now or in the fall or in the spring?
You want to do that in the fall.
Okay.
Yep.
When they die back. And I don't, you know, Fred, you know better than I, but I don't think just taking those bulbs out are going to hurt the tree that much.
No, that's not going to hurt the tree. It's too minor.
Yeah.
You know, you're digging to some of the roots, but it's,
and
you know.
Basically, you don't have an option.
No,
and
so that part.
You got to get them out of there.
Yeah. No, I'd agree.
Okay. Dennis in Clifton Park violated the prime directive, don't send photographs. But yet, I'm going to answer his question anyway, or at least ask it. Dennis says, my hanging petunia plants are not doing well. They have the sun partially during the day. I keep the soil damp but not wet and feed them periodically. Can you take a look at the photo and give me an opinion on what I'm doing wrong? Well, Dennis, you know this is wrong, but I will pass around the photo of the petunias. They look pretty good to me. Bob, what do you think?
You know, I'm going to guess that it maybe got dry once or twice, but also petunia is like a very acidic soil.
Yeah.
And if you're not acidifying that soil with a fertilizer that is acidifying or adding a little sulfur to it, I mean, we fertilize petunias once a week with an acidifying fertilizer because they like a low pH, and if they don't have it, they start to look really crappy.
They really do. They want it like in the 5.5 kind of range, and they
don't recover from it easily.
Once they go,
those don't look that bad.
Can you just put lemon juice or something or a light solution of water and lemon juice in the soil?
There's lots of ways, but just sulfur is the easiest way to bring it down.
Yeah,
or an acidifying fertilizer.
Absolutely, yeah. We grow a lot of petunias in the spring for the plant sales at the Arboretum, and our water is very alkaline, so we have to acidify. So what I've used is it's actually a specific petunia feed. It's
there
different than all my
feed.
Other types of fertilizers. So
a
specific petunia feed, and our water is like 7.2.
Wow.
7.3, so definitely alkaline, and we grow great petunias. But the years that I did not use that specific acidic petunia feed, they would show major intravenal chlorosis on the leaves.
And most municipal, you're lucky because that's not too bad. Most municipal water is 8 or 8.2.
Oh, it's that high? Okay.
Because chlorine doesn't work at a lower pH.
Oh, so they got to make sure.
They got to make it. They got to bring that pH up.
So almost guaranteed probably a pH problem. And I agree with Bob. It might have dried out time to time here or there. But, get that petunia feed.
You know, what I tell my guys with watering is, you can do it right for 90 days. You do it wrong for one day, you got a problem.
That's all it takes.
Right.
When it's this hot.
It can be really discouraging, too. You know, I've lost some plants that were grown for the fall sale. We've been growing them right along. One weekend during that 100,
this heat,
90, 100-degree weather.
Yep.
One weekend, and now, they're going to lift. Yeah. But the foliage looks pretty scorched.
Well, sell them for half off at the
They were grade A premium plant, but now you're right. That's exactly so. Yeah. A few specials on Hackberry this fall. when it was listening.
All right, one more email for now. Then we'll take a break. Then we'll go to the phones for the time being. It's 800-348-2551. Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum, and the returning Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery. Donna writes in, I have 25-year-old blueberry bushes that have to be moved. Do we transplant or start with new ones, Dale Isla?
I would say that depends on the condition of the plants. If the plants are really healthy, there's no reason why you can't move them. Once you do move them, and I would move them in the spring, after you move them in the spring, cut them all the way back to the ground. Let those roots get established, and they will have lots of energy to then put up lots of new growth.
Mm.
If it's an older variety, or if it seems like they're kind of diseased, or the berries are really small, I would just start with new, because there's a lot of new varieties out there with really nice traits, nice big fruit. So if it's a cherished plant and you really like the berries, there's no reason you can't move it.
All right. Fair
enough. When you say spring move, you're talking about prior to foliage growing?
Yes, I'm talking about as soon as the ground
is diggable.
So in March.
There are a lot of things with shrubs, particularly fruit bearing, as you know better than I, but also with things like grasses, where the new varieties are so much improved. It's often nice to just go to something new because it's going to be a much better plant. Disease resistance and production.
And production-wise.
And insect resistance. Lots of new stuff.
Huh.
Better than the old stuff.
Good point.
All right, number here is 800-348-2551. Yeah, gardening show, and we have just begun. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back. Full of Blues, win with me here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number if you have a gardening question today for the team. Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, at Bob Graves. Let's begin in Saratoga. Vincent has been standing by. Vincent, you're on.
Hello. I've got what I would call a square-inch garden in my backyard.
Okay.
And I've been putting it in tomatoes, cucumbers, beans, and this year my cucumbers have just failed miserably. They seem to grow up. I get some flowers, maybe a cucumber, and then it just fizzles out, and it looks like it's going to be wilty, and then the plant dies.
Oh boy.
Okay, so you probably have bacterial wilt that is spread by mostly the striped cucumber beetle. Have you noticed any small yellow and black striped beetles on those plants?
No, but I'll go take a look when I get done with you.
They're beautiful little bugs.
They are beautiful, but they're nasty little bugs.
Yes. Fred has a way of dealing with them, but we'll deal with
them.
I treated the area with nematodes this spring.
Yeah, so nematodes will go after other nematodes that are in the soil, but the cucumber beetle flies in from other areas. And the problem is when it chews on the leaf, it transmits a bacterial disease into the cucumber plant that then plugs up the vascular system. So that's why they start to wilt and then die. And the plant is most susceptible when it's young. It can affect it when the plants are older, but especially if those get chewed on before they have, say, four true leaves, then the prognosis is not very good.
No, Vincent.
So I've been taking the dead ones out as fast as I can. I'm not, but and I have maybe out of 8 plants, I've got 3 left.
Is that a place where row cover helps to keep the insect?
I was just going to say, you know, the best thing to do is cover it with some row cover or some insect netting. You know, the beetle is not a super big bug, but most insect netting will keep out that size bug. And so basically you're just preventing that insect from accessing the plant. And I will tell you that just today we planted some more cucumbers for late cucumber crop. So, you know, if you like late cucumbers, it's not too late to get some more going.
Yeah, all right, Vincent. Go ahead, man.
Is it in the soil that I have to change out my soil, or
aerial? It's transmitted directly by the cucumber beetle.
Yep, similar to like Dutch elm disease. It's a beetle flies to elm trees, and then the actual beetle introduces the fungus and it blocks up vascular system.
All right, Vincent, thanks a lot for the call. Those we only did cucumbers a couple times in our garden. I was fascinated by these little beetles. We had terrible cucumbers, but they were cool bugs. And Fred, we know your method with these, right?
Well, you know,
go ahead, tell everyone. It's been a couple of years. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I've used it on other things. Cucumber beetle, it might work with. I've never personally tried the cucumber beetle, but I know with the Japanese beetles, it certainly has proven to help.
Yeah.
So we create a thing called a death juice. And you know, you don't want to use your prime blender for this one. You pick, you know, an old blender ideally.
Right.
You know, the wives don't get too happy when you use their blenders on these. But you make blender with water and you put in hand pick a bunch of beetles, like let's say Japanese beetles on my roses, throw them in there and blend them up real good, and then you can sprinkle that all over the plants and they smell the death from their kin. And they are more discouraged to go elsewhere.
You ever try that over at Fatigan's?
No.
We never put the little heads on little skewers or anything.
No, that's what
like
I would do.
That.
Put them on spikes as a warning to the others.
That's next level. Yeah. That's the next step.
The thing is, though, is there a qualitative difference between the innards of the Japanese beetle and the cucumber beetle? You know, could one size fit all?
Not a lot of research on that.
I don't think it's been a lot of research conducted on that. But I got to think that, you know, hey, you know, you see your friends pureed on your plant leaves. It's going to it's going to give them a warning. They're going to think twice.
Insect netting's a whole lot easier.
Okay. There's a lot of picking on those.
Go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Teresa is in Orange County. Hello, Teresa. Oh, Teresa.
Hey,
you're on. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yay. Hey, thanks everybody for being there. So, for years I have had this amazing lilac tree and
She dropped out. Hang on. She's on the road, obviously. Let's give her a second.
Really?
Hang on, Teresa. We lost most of that because we heard the lilac tree, and then you went dead. So now you're back. Give it a shot. Oh, mercy. Are you
She's
in
gone.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Not that well, Teresa. I tell you what. If you call back, I'll know it's you, and we'll get you on there. Give it a try. 5 minutes or so, the connection's bad. And so we'll do it 800-348-2551. I hate that.
Yeah, without hearing the question, this is a really big year for leaf diseases on plants, and lilacs are getting just battered with it.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, and this, you know, without hearing her question specifically, the plant may not be dead. I could see the question said, you know, it looks like a tree died, lilac tree died. But it's a good chance that if it's been healthy all these years, it's probably got some of that leaf fungal problem that
we
is
had
just
this
so
last
common.
Year where everybody was
we did last
in.
Year too.
It's early, so, but we had really early wet weather, which is what caused it.
And if
it,
that's the case, then there's no problem. It'll come back full green next year.
Scratch the twigs. Look at the buds. See? Yep,
the twigs are green, then definitely it's good and leave it alone.
All right, I think Teresa's calling back.
All right.
Probably missed your answer to the question we never even heard, which is your Nostradamus. Well, it was wonderful. We'll go back to Teresa in a little bit.
With cards.
I really hate you're driving along and you finally get through to whoever you're talking to and then you'll go through a tunnel or something.
I know.
All right, we'll try Teresa in a couple minutes.
All right.
Meantime, let's go to Lynn in Shelburne, Massachusetts. Lynn, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually have two questions I hope I can get answered. Number one, my hibiscus seemed to be getting chewed up terribly by something.
Japanese beetle is my guess.
Yeah, they're just destroying them. Oh,
it's been a kind of a bad year. It seems like in certain spots for Japanese beetle, and then other places not so bad. We're not too bad at the Landis Arboretum.
What I'm noticing is that it's varietal specific too. Some of mine are chewed up, and some of them aren't, and they're right next to each other.
Yeah, the leaves look like lace.
Yeah,
that's definitely Japanese beetle.
But they're still going to flower.
Yep,
they're flowering nicely.
Yes, they are,
and it won't kill your plant.
No.
Lynn, have you tried making the death juice?
Not yet.
No? Okay.
Yeah, I might just do that. I'm going to tell my husband I use the blender.
Ah. There you go. That's right. It works both ways.
So what is the second question?
The second question is my backyard, which has been trying to lime and feed. I sent some samples off to UMass to have them analyzed, and I've been fooling around back there, and I've got some grass growing. Don't think it's going to make it to...
What did the analysis tell you when it came back?
It needed a lot of lime.
It was very acidic, that's right. The pH was low. Ah.
Yep.
Yes.
Now, you know, the trick with a lawn, it takes a long time for the pH to change. So if you lime it isn't like next week, it's going to be better. It's going to be the fall or next year. But the other thing
I did it last year.
Last year. Well, okay. The other thing with trying to get grass to grow is if you can't water it every day, don't bother.
I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have one more question for you on the grass.
Can
I put hot lime on it while it's growing?
Yeah, sure. You can put lime on it anytime. But once you put lime on it, maybe you want to get the pH checked again because you don't want to overshoot it and go too high.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 if you want to join in the fun here on The Gardening Show. Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves, and Fred Breglia join us. And let's see here. Oh, boy, this is fun. Let's read an email or two. Oh, no, you know what? Let's see if Teresa is in a good spot. Teresa, are you in a good spot, my friend?
Totally in a good spot.
All right, go ahead.
Totally. Okay. So we've had this big, giant lilac for years, and it's beautiful. It's a purple one. It has dark purple on the purple on the inside, and then it has this little line. So it's kind of a variegated lilac. Last year, it was the invasion. It was the invasion of the gypsy moth again. And then what happened was they started kind of going after the lilac, but we have now seen the spotted lanternfly. So toward the end of the season, it looked like it got like a powdery mildew and took out all the leaves on this beautiful, beautiful lilac. So I went after it with copper spray. Long story short, it started to make its way back this spring. And then sure enough, I see some more spotted lantern flies on it. And I spend my falls and summers scraping these things off the trees. And this thing, my beautiful lilac, is dead as a doornail. Can you guys help me understand maybe what happened and what's my next step?
So the plant's been good all these years, and then this past year in the fall, it looked pretty bad, correct?
It looked pretty bad.
But then it came back.
And
it came back this spring looking good?
It came back. It kind of came limping back this spring. And it did have some blooms on it, but it was nothing like the tree that we had just the year prior.
So the foliage didn't look too good on it this spring when it first came out?
No, and I have pictures, and I know Ray's feelings about pictures. So I'm not going to do that, but maybe at some point in time I can send you some pictures of the tree and, the bark and the pictures. Because if we're going to cut this thing down and let it try again, I just don't want... I mean, this thing was there for 20 years.
I'm hesitant to blame the spotted lanternfly for this.
So am I.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the combination of the drought last fall and then we had such a cold winter, colder winter than normal. So are you in a low spot that maybe your winter temperatures got even colder than normal?
We are on the top. Well, we're pretty close to the top of the mountain, so we're in a spot that it's liked for 20 years.
Right, it's been there for 20 years. Do you scratch the twigs on it so that you see if they're green or if they're like brown, the little twigs?
They look like they have the bark is cracked, and the bark is also a little
almost like it's been scratched a little.
Okay. Let me ask you. So, and these are like large. So this is a lilac that developed a fairly large stem, multiple large stems at this stage.
Again? Correct. Yeah.
Yep. So you know what it very well could be then. Generally, what we do with lilacs is we prevent those really big stems from getting that big. So every year we take out like a few of the largest stems and let it be replaced by younger growth. And when they get like that and you're starting to say stuff with the bark, it's making me think lilac borer. You very well might have lilac borer, and that's just going to shut down the main plant.
You can see if you look down on those big stems, yep. You're going to see some damage, like somebody carved out a little bit of the branch.
Yeah, and you should see some holes, especially if you'll see little round holes.
Like a drill.
Like a small drill. Mm. I'll bet you that you're going to see, you'll have to look around. It's not going to be a lot of those holes. It's going to be like one.
Now, the other thing, since she's at a higher elevation, they get a bacterial disease in the year when you get wet weather, when it's near freezing temperatures.
They can.
And that can just contribute. You know, all stresses on a plant are cumulative.
Right. Yep.
You get a fungus from last year. Maybe you got some borer. Maybe you got a bacterial. And it's a gradual decline for a lot of reasons.
Yep. Yeah. So it's worth taking a chance on this one to rejuvenate it. So not much you can do this time of year with it. But next year when we start to get close to spring, before the growth actually occurs, you'll see the buds on that plant or other plants start to swell. And what that indicates is that there's a good chunk of energy in the root system, and it's getting ready to push it into the plant. Hmm. So you want to take that plant right out, cut it. You know, if it's not looking good, you got nothing to lose. And lilacs are one that rejuvenates really, really well. So if the problem is more in the stem and the root system still has energy, and the fact that it's been there 20 years tells me it's got a heck of a root system on there. So I think cutting it to the ground next year, if there is some small growth, leave that. But just all your big canes before the growth occurs and you see the buds start to swell, and then you should, if the root system has the energy, you'll get a brand new shrub that summer, and you'll lose the flowers that year, and then if you get that, you're in good shape because now you're renewed. Yep. You're going to get another chance.
It'll probably come back.
Now, if she has borer, seems like it might be good to get that cut out now to remove any borers from the area.
You could. Okay. You could.
Teresa, thank you for that one. And to be clear, I love pictures. As a man who can barely read, I really love pictures. But nobody else can see them in radio land. So that's sort of why that's a rule. You don't send pictures because nobody can see them. And, you know, Dale Isla can describe them all day, but it's not the same, right?
Yep.
Let's go to Florida, Massachusetts, and talk to John. John, you're on.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Well, I had a question about rutabagas. We call them Florida mountain turnips up here, but we've been dealing with different bugs throughout the years. But recently, I say recently, within the last 5 years, I've had a certain type of, it's a cross between a centipede and a millipede. And they will chew all the small fibrous roots off of the plants from when they're really tiny until they're mature. And they'll curl up like a millipede in your hand when you hold them, but unlike a centipede, but they don't have, you know, they have less legs than a millipede. They're a different bug.
Yeah, it sounds like it's probably a wireworm.
A wireworm?
No, it's not a wireworm.
No.
We have wireworms, too, and they're orange. These are darker. They're almost black.
Huh.
The wireworms I'm familiar with, they're more orange. So this is a new bug to me within the last 5 years, and they're getting worse and worse.
More legs than a centipede.
Like is
a
that
bicentipede?
Sounds like
there's more legs than a centipede. And less legs than a millipede, but if you hold them in their hand, they will curl up into a ball like a Cinnabon.
Like a Cinnabon. That sounds appetizing.
Yeah. You know, offhand, I mean, there are some different species of wireworm, but that it may be a different species of millipede, actually. I think I'd have to get out there with a hand lens and actually be looking at it or see some samples. But certainly something like that, to rotate away from where you've been growing them is always a good option if you have that ability.
Would nematodes work on something like that?
Nematodes might work, depending
on what it is.
We would need to get a positive ID on what it is. You can send samples to the UMass Plant Diagnostic Lab, and they could get it identified for you, because until we know exactly what the critter is, it's kind of hard to say exactly how to treat it. Do you have the ability to rotate to a different piece of ground?
Actually, I have four pieces of ground, and I think this last piece that I just replanted, I don't have a huge farm, but I do rotate my crops. I have a small, like 45 feet by 45 feet. I have a few of those. And it's been like 3 years since I put rutabagas in this spot, and I was hoping to get rid of this particular centipede / millipede, whatever it is, because, it just came back in droves. It came back in aces.
Got to get it identified.
Yeah, you need to get it identified. Yeah. The other thing is, we've had a couple wet springs in a row, and that makes a big difference for a lot of these insects in building up populations. So I would get a sample sent off.
These guys are doing great.
All right, John.
I did put some 7 on them yesterday, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, without knowing what it is, that's kind of a shot in the dark.
What's 7?
It's one of the insecticides that's available for people that grow vegetables.
Uh-huh.
Kills a lot of different insects.
It's okay for the vegetables? John will be growing it.
It's supposed to be.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
I'd rather not have to use it, but I don't know what else to do.
I think the key is getting that pest ID'd, and sounds like the UMass would. Let's just not. It's easy when you stop guessing, and all of a sudden now you know what it is, and now we can actually talk. Hey, this is how you treat it.
Yeah, well, call us back and let us know. We're about ready for a break here, but thanks for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Gardening today, boy, it's moving quickly. Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Buddy Rich. A song named after one of my favorite snacks. That's Big Mac. Buddy Rich hit the orchestra here from the Roar of 74. By the way, if you're interested in antiques, you can see one when I make a live appearance at the Hart Clewitt Museum. We're doing an antiques road show sort of deal, and we'll get sued if we call it that. But it's a WAMC on the road show that is featuring antiques, okay? And we'll have folks from the Stair Galleries there to give a verbal appraisal of your antiques. We're going to make a radio show out of it. Kathy Sheehan, who is the Rensselaer County historian and the head of the Hart Clewitt Museum, will be there and show some cool stuff from the museum. It's going to be an event. Whether it's a fun event depends on you. Please come, and I tell you what, all you got to do is go to WAMC.org, and you can find out all about it. Just click on the icon for WAMC on the road. Number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. And, of course, I say, we can't really take pictures here on the show. And Aaron sent a beautiful picture of the monarch caterpillar, the first one they've seen this season. It's in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Isn't that nice?
It's gorgeous.
It is beautiful.
No more pictures, Aaron, but it's very nice and well done. 800-348-2551. All right, so couple emails and then we'll go. Our friend Christine in Water Valley, who is a living saint, says, I planted several Boston ivy plants, hoping they would climb my chain link fence. 5/6 are climbing at a snail's pace. Anything I can do to speed the growth?
You fertilize it, and that's going to give it growth. So fertilize, water, and also start to tie them up a little bit. Start to pull them up and help them.
Won't they just connect to the chain link fence?
They don't twine that way. These guys actually attach with little ET fingers. If you think of ET fingers,
interesting.
Little suction cup fingers. So a chain link fence is a little bit harder for it to climb up the side of a building. is perfect, which is why Boston Ivy is so famously covering so many buildings, including the ones in Boston, Harvard University, all those ivy covered buildings.
Oh, beautiful.
That's all Boston Ivy.
What we
and
do
it doesn't hurt the siding as much as like a lot of other plants do. So it's very delicately attached.
What we do with them is as they grow, we will take the pieces and stretch them along the ground and hold them down with some stakes, because what a Boston Ivy wants to do is it wants to go up first and then out.
Yep.
And if you want it to cover the fence, you got to have it go out on the bottom.
And then it'll go then up.
Oh, interesting.
That's a good trick, too.
All right. This is from Jeffrey in Coxsackie. I witnessed my neighbors cutting down their beautiful lilac bush. The leaves were brown. Most had fallen off. My lilac bushes also have had a similar problem, but after listening to your show, I know the problem is due to heat and humidity. Please let your listeners know it's a temporary problem.
Yeah, and we've been getting a lot of calls this year about that. Lilacs are and it's not just lilacs, it's maples, it's all kinds of plants. I mean,
crab
we have fungal problems
really
everywhere. It started out as a really wet spring, got all these funguses ramped up,
yeah.
Everything started to attack, and then you know, a lot of people say, well, it's dry. You know, why didn't it stop? Well, it's dry from a perspective of rain, but it's been humid. It's been really humid. And humidity is in theory almost just as bad as rain.
As long as there's moisture in the air, it doesn't matter whether it's the form of rain or humid.
That's right. And it got them all started from that wet spring. So, you know, if you have foliar diseases on your plants, and especially lilacs, but all kinds of plants, maples, I've seen everything this year. Don't cut them down. Most of them are benign. Most of them are going to come back. There are funguses that will threaten the life of plants and kill things. But most of these foliar ones this year are not bad. I've seen tar spot this year on maple.
Yep.
That was like, I mean, wow, that's so much tar spot. It's just, you almost can't even recognize the maple leaf. And that's going to come back perfect next year. So don't cut them down. They're going
to
come back.
Okay. This one's from Joe in Schoharie, and then we'll go back to the phones. Joe says, my home flower gardens are a salad bar for the deer and groundhogs. Ain't that the truth? Can you please give me ideas of perennials that I could add to my garden for a pop of color that the deer won't munch on? I don't have full sun. Plants requiring partial shade would be ideal. And that's from Josie in Schoharie.
I've gotten to the point where somebody asks me, is it deer resistant? I just say no. Because the deer eat things they're not supposed to eat.
They do. You know, and you know hosta is definitely one of those ones that they will eat. And then yet at the Arboretum, we've got like so many of our hosta that were eaten this year. And then there's certain varieties of hosta right next to the ones they're eating. And they're not
and
even
you
touched.
Don't know which
they're
ones
not
they
even
are
touched. So we are at the point now where my wife is actually, she's the gardener at the Arboretum, and she's been digging up a lot of these ones that, you know, even though I love them, I'm like, man, I don't want you to move them. But every year they're just gone. And she's
sell them at the sale.
So well, you know, we composted those, and then we're putting
some
in,
of the some
a lot of,
the,
of echinacea sometimes can hold up pretty good.
The repellents work really well too. You know, a dried rotten egg, garlic type.
They're
thing.
Not cheap though.
No,
Mr. Nursery Owner.
It does. Yeah. Hey, I sell stuff for a living.
I hear you, man. I'm not talking about your nursery.
Garlic powders also work. The rotten egg, you know, sort of deer be gone kind of recipes. We did post one on our website. We do have a
dried
like blood info sheet. So if you want a recipe for it, deer be gone.
They really do work, though.
Landisarboretum.org. They do work. You just got to reapply.
Exactly. So we kind of let ours slide a little bit and paid the price.
If you're serious about deer, you put up a 7-foot fence.
That's the real way to stop them,
It's got
to
be 7 feet. I've seen them go over a 6-foot fence without breaking stride.
I don't think we have zoning in my town that would allow that.
Well, you don't have to. It doesn't have to be anything. You see, it can be electric.
Put a 7-foot electric fence, so it's like Dannemora prison.
Well, the high line.
Great idea, Bob.
If you drive by some of the orchards in Columbia County, that's what it looks
they
like.
They do.
It
looks like you don't prison. Just put 1 and 7. You got 7. You got 5. You got 4. You got them all the way down.
Yeah,
so.
And you put a little bit of peanut butter on some aluminum foil, so their wet nose
comes
hits
it,
and that keeps them
now,
away.
I did the same thing with a woodchuck. I had a low one. It was only like a foot off the ground.
Yeah.
And I watched him. He came up and hit it. Flit over backwards, flipped over backwards, and went away. I never saw him again.
You're never going to see him again. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, the rabbits are the things that are really getting us. They're munching.
There's
everything.
A lot of rabbits right now. Same thing. And they don't seem to be as deterred by these things.
They don't.
Well, they do, but again we haven't applied.
Yeah, do it all the time.
Yeah, and we don't recommend a death juice for these types of critters.
No. You know what? You guys are in a weird place today. All of you with the electric fences and.
But the echinacea is a good option.
That's a good one.
And we've had good luck with the deer staying away from our hibiscus and our lupins.
And black-eyed Susan's also not too bad.
What I'm noticing with hydrangeas is they eat some of them, but they don't eat other varieties.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. With rhododendron, they eat some of them, but they don't eat
others. They don't eat all. Yeah. Yep. They definitely have like a preference.
There's preference.
Hard to believe. It's the hosta right next to each other.
And one's perfect,
and the other one just we can't keep it there. It's one of my favorite ones. Big blue and really
nice to know what the taste is that deters them there.
Well, they say every hosta I've ever tasted, they're all different.
Sorry, what?
Yeah.
Hosta I've ever tasted.
Don't get him started.
No, you know.
I've never had two the same. Yeah. You know, some are more lettucey, some are more bok choy. Okay.
You know what? Let's just go back to the phones, and we'll go right now to Adams, Massachusetts, and it's Paulette's turn. Paulette, you're on. Hello, Paulette. How you doing?
Oh, hello. I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, you're on.
For 7 years, I've had seven beautiful orchids, the more common type, and they have bloomed and done very well. And for the last several months, I discovered a white sticky thing on them. I went online to find out what it was on YouTube, and I've been treating them the way it suggested. And these things are so resilient, and they keep coming back. And they've killed a couple of my orchids. I have three that are still trying to survive, and I just don't know how to get rid of this.
When you got it identified, what was it? Was it a scale or a mealybug, or do you know what the?
No, it wasn't. I forgot the name of it, but it's almost like cotton candy, but it's white and it's sticky.
That sounds like mealybug.
It sounds like mealybug.
Yeah, and mealybug can be in the soil. So it'll come back. If you treat the leaves and the stems, it'll continually come back.
If you see these little white critters, being that they're small, do they just squash real easy? Are they real soft and they're easy to
squat?
Do they just squat? Like if you pinched one, it would squash real easy to squash and kill it?
It's like little cotton.
Yeah, it doesn't squash. It just feels like it looks like cotton, and it's just sticky like cotton candy.
Yeah, the stickiness is the excretion of the insect.
Yep, it sounds like a mealybug.
You can clean them off with a Q-tip and alcohol, but they're going to keep coming back because the larvae are in the soil.
You can apply alcohol to the leaves of a plant?
Yeah, just on it, like a Q-tip.
Yeah, oh, really? Q-tip. Yep.
Yeah. Doesn't burn them.
Yeah. Safer soap would probably take
soap
out
would do it
the
too.
Insects. It wouldn't treat the soil.
Yeah, I've done all of that.
Have you repotted in different
cinnamon.
Soil?
I have. I think this morning I had to clean another one that was coming back quite well.
Now, I
think I'll just get new soil.
There is a systemic insecticide that you can put on the soil. It's a very limited use. It's not sold for outside use in New York anymore, but you could use it on that soil because they're going to keep coming back. It's just they're in the soil. And you can't get them in there with anything that you're using.
Why is it no longer sold in New York?
New York State banned it for outside use.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a last resort. It's like you're not going to be able to get it any other way. Sometimes you got to go.
And it's very safe. You're just putting a granular on the soil.
Right.
It's not dangerous that way.
Okay, Paulette, thanks a lot. Let's go to Colony. It's Marilyn's turn. Marilyn, you're on.
Oh, hello. Yes. My question is about certain lilies that I have growing outside. It's, I think, an Asian lily or Oriental lily. I keep getting those red lily beetles, and I've tried to get rid of them, and I can't. I've sprayed them with neem and also the safer soap, and they just eat all the leaves and just kill those.
That's
lilies all the time.
It's a lily leaf beetle, and it's real common, and it's a real problem. The insecticides you're using aren't going to solve that problem because they're contact killers. So if you don't hit the insect, you don't get it. Mm. You might need to use something that has a little more systemic action to it. They are controllable.
And what could I use? Can you give me an example or not?
I think permethrin would be one of the possibilities.
Is spinosad?
Okay.
Spinosad might work.
Yeah, spinosad would be an biological, an organic option.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
The
lilies
will come back.
I'll try those and see what happens.
Okay.
All right.
And, Yeah, it's sort of frustrating, but hey.
Yeah, there's a lot
they
of them.
It can be bad. Yeah, those things can be.
I know it. Well, okay, well, thanks so much for your help.
Thanks, and good luck. Appreciate the call. Let's go to another caller from Adams, Massachusetts. It's Jim. Hello, Jim.
Yay, Ray.
Hello.
Yes, Ray, it's good to see you're really fully back in the harness and pulling with the rest of the team there at WAMC.
All right. Thank you, Jim. What do you got all on right. your mind there, buddy?
Okay, a couple of things. One on the grinding up the bugs to make a repellent for the other bugs. I heard about when you would do that, but let it sit out for a while and ferment. Any of the bacteria that are present in those bugs you ground up or any bacteria circulating around in your environment, get in there and it'll really make it a really potent poison.
It definitely doesn't get better smelling as you leave it out.
Nice job.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. But
glad we came back to that.
Make a really potent poison to kill those insects. Not just repel them, but kill them.
Okay.
And you folks were talking earlier about fruit pies and berry pies and apple pies. My mother had a cousin, ran a bakery in Adams for years and years, and his quest as a professional bakery owner was to make an apple pie where the only ingredients were the shell and apples, not loading in sweeteners, sugars, whatever, not putting in cinnamon, nutmegs, mace, cloves, whatever people put in. People think they're tasting apples. No, they're tasting the cinnamon and the sugar.
Oh, man.
He wanted to find the right variety of apples, or maybe more than one variety, to put into a pie so you had a beautiful, complete, complex flavor. It was not too sweet, not too tart, and that was just an apple pie.
Wow.
There's a challenge for your baker.
All right. Well, thanks tomorrow. A lot. We'll talk about. Why don't you call in tomorrow, and you can talk to Ellen Gray about just this topic on Food Friday, because it's all about pies. Hey, buddy, thanks for the call. Let's go to Who's a Tonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could cook a plant hot peppers and limes in your garden. And speaking of critters, do squirrels ever get to people's gardens,
squirrels? Yeah, they have lots of fun. Well, the hot peppers and limes question is fresh and new. What does everybody think?
The hot pepper is guaranteed. I mean, hot peppers are the hardest thing about hot pepper, in my opinion, is getting the seeds to germinate. But otherwise, they grow really well in containers. I mean,
we grew jalapenos when I was a kid, and they're delicious.
Oh, yeah. Killer, yeah.
Give me heartburn.
Yeah, no problem.
What about the limes, people? It doesn't seem like a good chance. And frankly, we
put them in the same pot. No.
Not in the same pot. People do grow limes around here.
Yeah, okay. You guys got to bring them in.
You just got to bring them in. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've seen that as a patio plant, actually.
One that,
more common than you think.
Yes, Chris.
One last question. Sure. It's a fine to kill a squirrel, by the way.
It's a fine to kill a squirrel. All right, let's not kill any squirrels then. And let's quickly go to Jeff in Burnt Hills. Jeff, we only have about 45 seconds. Go ahead.
I've got this really weird weed that I looked up online that I couldn't identify. It's called clammy goosefoot.
Oh, yeah.
Supposedly it comes from Australia. I was wondering if you guys had any experience with this thing. It's really difficult to get rid of, and if you had any suggestions.
They're all looking it up, Jeff.
Is it in the garden or in the lawn? Where is it?
So I had a pool put in, and they put a bunch of sand fill in, and it's in, like, I put some stones around, and I think it came in that sand.
Huh.
And it's
really
called
weird weed. It's sticky and
clammy goosefoot?
Clammy goosefoot. Who
came right up.
Was also
clammy goosefoot.
Yep, it is native to
Louisiana
Australia,
blues
like
man from the 20s.
You know, I've never had to battle that one.
Yeah, I mean, the best bet's obviously to pull it,
but
cultivate it out.
Yeah, or if it's in a spot that you can smother
it,
you know, I always say if you can smother it, it's easier. So use a weed whacker and if it's a spot where you can just, you know, got a lot of it, weed whack it down and then smother it with some kind of black plastic type thing. That would work.
Tell you what, let's do research on that for the next show. Yep. Jeff, we're out of time. Fred Breglia, how do people find out more about the 5K over at the Landis, et cetera?
Yep. Go to our website, landisarboretum.org, and we're located at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York.
Delilah Riggs. The Berry Patch is in full operation.
TheBerryPatch.net and our Facebook page for The Berry Patch, Friday, Saturday, and Sundays on Route 22 in Steventown.
Yeah, and so enjoy. You're going to give Fred that.
I am going to let him take these for his son.
The horned worms.
Yeah, we got a treat for you, Mike, if you're listening.
Delicious.
Hornworms.
Bob, how do we find out more about Fatigan's?
Fatigan's, 1140 Troy Schenectady Road in Latham, New York. We're about 2.5 miles west of the Northway near the airport road.
You got a radio voice, man. Support comes from, you want to do the underwriting?
Sure.
Sorry. Only semi-professionals are allowed. No, support comes from Whitney's Farm Market and Garden Center, Cheshire, featuring a Boar's Head Deli with daily specials, lobster rolls Friday through Sunday, family meals to go, homemade baked goods, fudge, and seasonal produce, whitneysfarm.com. The Olana Partnership, presenting What's Missing, artworks in the Olana landscape, outdoor artworks by Ellen Harvey, Gabriella Salazar, revealing missing pieces of Olana's landscape, olana.org/whatsmissing. And WAMC On the Road, it's our new programming initiative bringing public radio in person throughout the WAMC listening area and face-to-face with listeners in their own communities. WAMC.org for more information. And you can find out about my appearance August 26th at the Hart Clewitt Museum. Already having night sweats about it. We'll see you there. Tomorrow it's Food Friday, and it's Ellen Gray and Pies.